you beautiful bastards. Hope you've been a fantastic Wednesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is actually, it was a viewer-requested story that I was going to save for Friday, but I kind of want to just knock it out. I think a lot of people thought I was going to talk about this on Monday, but the thumbnail I had was in reference to YouTube Rewind, not this specific situation, but here we go. I want to say it was about a week ago we covered the Forbes top 10 highest-paid YouTuber list. We went through the list, and it was a lot of names you would expect. Some people might be surprised by channels like Ryan Toys Review. And also of note, and this will come into play in a second, I mentioned that these numbers aren't exact. This is speculation from Forbes. I mean, the true top 10 list, the number is going to be different, and you're probably going to have a bunch of different faces. But it's still interesting to see lists like this pop up. Well, one of the stories that ended up popping up is you had a massive creator by the name of Lily Singh, aka Superwoman. In response to the article, she tweeted, 2 years ago, it was almost even between male and female. Last year, it was just me, and this year, there are no females at all. Something I predicted in my Instagram caption last year. I'm concerned the digital space is going to repeat the mistakes of ancient industries. Hope I'm wrong. Then 2 days later, she tweeted, as a result, I received some angry tweets from men. Remind me why you are mad again? I'm not playing a quote gender card. I'm literally stating facts about results in an article. Let's do better. I'm not your enemy. Then 2 days after that, tweeting, my concern wasn't me not being on the list. I likely don't deserve to be on the list this year, to be honest. I've had a tough year. I know that. My concern was no female representation. And by pointing out that concern, I am not attacking the men on the list. They should be proud of their accomplishments. Even the few who may not be fond of me. Secure your bag, my friend. Nor am I attacking Forbes or YouTube. I am simply pointing out a concerning cultural pattern slash trend that I see within the industry. And as a woman, and honestly just as a human being, I feel it's important to be concerned about patterns like this. And then later adding, if standing up for my fellow women slash sisters makes me a target for attack, then I'll learn to live with that. I say this with love in my heart and a smile on my face, zero desire to create drama. And I had people asking, well, what is your opinion regarding what Lily's throwing out there? And what I would personally say is I think that Lily is basing a reaction to all of this on information that may not be completely factual, as well as a misunderstanding of our environment here online versus that of the mainstream entertainment industry. One, regarding the how factual the list is part, I don't want to blow up people's spots, but I've heard and seen some of the money that gets thrown around in the female beauty vlogger space, and ho ho ho. Obviously, a lot of people out there are going to have different deals. Do they do it themselves? Do they not? But I mean, you're talking about an industry that has incredibly fantastic margins. So it really wouldn't surprise me if some of the top paid people on the platform were women. Also, some of the people on this list and off this list, I mean, the number's going to be different because they have some partnerships or equity deals with certain companies. That's why, once again, I think this reaction is happening from something that is not entirely factual. And two, regarding the difference in our industry versus that of mainstream, is that there's really not as many middlemen or gatekeepers or decision makers. I mean, we've seen some of the old players integrate into the industry. All of a sudden, people have managers, agents. But at the end of the day, the people on this list, like what is being calculated, it seems to be based off of views, which generates YouTube advertising revenue, as well as third-party ad sales, as well as merchandise. And for the most part, that is completely based on whoever the creator is and the audience they're able to pull in. And the funny thing is, I wouldn't be completely shocked to find that Lily Singh and creators like her get a far better advertising rate than people like me. And that's not a man versus woman thing. That's just she makes much cleaner, safer content than I do, which is a creative and or business choice. And so I guess I don't know with Lily Singh pointing this out, kind of saying that this is a problem, what she imagines the solution might be. Right, I guess it comes down to what does she think that is holding women in the industry down versus their male counterparts. I personally just don't see what she's talking about being a reality in our industry. Right, it's a completely different world than giant corporation, 20th Century Fox hires two people of the same general size, but one's male, one's female, and the pay is disproportionate. But also on that note, I welcome Lily Singh or anyone that agrees with her regarding this list and the general situation online to educate me about how I'm wrong. And also, a thing that I want to tag on the end of this is me simply disagreeing with what she's putting out there, talking about that list, about why I think that none of this is kind of based on steady ground. Please do not take this as a reason to go harass her. People can disagree. And that's that. And there have been people that have publicly disagreed with her, and then I've seen just the slew of harassment thrown her way. Right? There's no reason. On topics like this, I think let's debate and hear where the other person's coming from. And through hearing those words, whoever's actually willing to listen, you either walk away with better information or at least an understanding of where someone is either at fault or where they're coming from. But with that said, of course, I welcome your thoughts on this, whether you agree, disagree. Let me know where you're coming from. Bye. Then in entertainment news, with it being the end of the year, we are now starting to see those lists pop up. The blank of 2018's. Most popular, the most consumed, the most searched for of 2018. And at the center of these releases today, we had Netflix and Pornhub. Regarding Netflix, while they're incredibly private about their numbers and are not showing exact numbers, they did release two interesting lists, the first being the most revisited movies on their platform. At number three, you had Roxanne, Roxanne. Number two, To All the Boys I've Loved Before. And number one, The Kissing Booth. And except for the top two, more than 50% of the people that watched that movie once then went back and watched it again. And their other list was the most binge series list. At 10, you have Orange is the New Black Season 6. Number 9, you have Insatiable, so maybe that's your answer for all the people that wanted that show to get canceled, why it is now coming back for Season 2. And with an E, Season 2, The Haunting of Hill House, Fastest Car, Bodyguard, Last Chance U, Indie. And standing on the podium, we have 13 Reasons Why Season 2. Oh my god, that season finale had me stressed. Being a Murderer Part 2. And at the number one spot, you had On My Block, which, I'll be honest, I had never heard of. But also, I don't think that should be the most surprising thing. Netflix, it feels like Netflix is just releasing too much. I mean, I will continue to try and watch all of it, but it's a different Netflix world nowadays. Remember when a Netflix series launching was like a big thing? Now I constantly find myself opening it up and I'm like, wait, what was released 5 days ago? But that said, Netflix, I love you. Thank you for letting me slowly waste my time with you. And then on the other side of this, we have Pornhub, who they are really fantastic about releasing their analytics. They released their Searches That Define 2018, and that top 10 list included the likes of Bowsette, followed by Tinder, Tattoos, Outdoor, Trans, Romantic, 4K. Turns out when people say size matters, sometimes they're talking about pixels. And as far as the top two, you had Fortnite and then Stormy Daniels. Also, I'm very excited to announce, America, we did it! We are the kings of searching for pornography on Pornhub, number one by a landslide. Which is really saying something if you think about it, because India, who has over 1.3 billion people, is at number three. We're just crushing it, so thank you for doing your part, America. And also of note, a little of YouTube was on this list. For popular celebrity searches, you had Stormy Daniels, Kim Kardashian, still rocking it, Black China, and then at number four, YouTuber Lena the Plug. We're just breaking into the mainstream everywhere. But yeah, that's that story. They're always watching you, watching them. That came out a little creepier than I intended. And then we have a quick update on Michael Cohen, President Trump's former personal attorney. He, as of this morning, has been sentenced to 3 years in federal prison. This regarding charges involving him lying to Congress, campaign finance violations, and tax evasion. And his sentence involves his plea agreements with the prosecutors in both the Southern District of New York and the Mueller investigation. Mueller's team crediting Cohen with significantly assisting their team in their investigation. We had Cohen issuing a statement in the courtroom saying, "I take full responsibility for each act that I pled guilty to. The personal ones to me and those involving the President of the United States of America." And also saying, "Recently, the President tweeted a statement calling me weak, and it was correct, but for a much different reason than he was implying. It was because time and time again, I felt it was my duty to cover up his dirty deeds." Although, a note regarding Cohen, he's not going straight to federal prison. He's not reporting there until March 6th. And actually, there was another bit of news that was somewhat related to this. As you might remember, among other things, there were allegations that Donald Trump had an affair with former Playboy model Karen McDougal. And connected to those allegations, you had the allegations that the National Inquirer killed that story for Donald Trump. They bought it for $150,000 and they killed it. Well, according to Axios, the Southern District of New York announced Wednesday that it has reached a non-prosecution agreement with American Media Inc., National Enquirer's parent company. Adding, as part of the agreement, AMI admitted to making a $150,000 payment in concert with then-candidate Trump's presidential campaign to suppress a story about an alleged affair. And prosecutors saying AMI admitted its principal purpose in making the payment was to suppress the woman's story so as to prevent it from influencing the election. And this, of course, massive news, because the story in the past was AMI was like, "Oh yeah, we gave her that money for editorial reasons." And all of this is incredibly meaningful because according to experts, this really hurts Trump's ability to say that that wasn't about the election, right? Because consistently, Donald Trump and his people have said, "Oh well, this was a private matter, it was not connected," but that's not what we're hearing from AMI, who did suppress the story. But as of right now, we're just getting these updates, and it'll be interesting to see if there are other dominoes that are going to fall. Very interesting times. And then let's talk about what's happening in the UK right now, because what's happening in the UK affects the EU and affects the world. So Brexit chaos has been more prominently back in the news again, and it's something that we last covered about a month ago. Of course, for months now, the United Kingdom and the European Union have been in negotiations over how the two would split. The UK has until March 29th of next year for any negotiations to be resolved, and while this could have been extended, British Prime Minister Theresa May made it a hard out by writing the deadline into law. And if no deal over Brexit is reached, it could create huge problems for UK businesses operating in Europe and the other way around, as well as chaos for UK citizens living in the EU and vice versa. And this deal is both big in the idea of it, as well as the actual literal size of it. On November 14th, a legally binding 585-page withdrawal deal was reached between British negotiators and the EU on many aspects on how the two would divorce, also including a non-binding 26-page statement on future relations between the two. So that kind of more of a statement of goodwill that these are the things they'd like to be done. That deal, of course, was not a done deal. It still needed to be ratified by Parliament, and that vote was set to happen on Tuesday, December 11th. Although, as mentioned when we covered it last, not a lot of people really excited about it. And so somewhat unsurprisingly, this past Monday night, May ended up scrapping the vote, admitting,
"The deal would be rejected by a significant margin.
And along with that, she didn't say when a new vote was planned, although nearly every party was demanding a vote happen before the end of the year, or at least no later than mid-January. Also, another interesting thing we've seen since we last covered this is a revitalized, more backed idea behind what people have been calling a people's vote, a second referendum. This idea behind, okay, let's have a second referendum, what if the people actually now want to stay? Maybe you had enough people liking the idea and the prospect of what would happen now that people have been trying to make that happen and it has just fallen incredibly short, what if the people now want to stay? But in addition to people like Theresa May saying, no, there will not be a second referendum, the people that had this idea, they faced the issue that it was believed that the UK couldn't do that without the approval of the other 27 member states of the EU. But on December 10th, one day before the vote on the Brexit deal was supposed to happen, the European Court actually ruled that the UK could unilaterally decide to cancel and keep their status in the EU as long as it was done, quote, democratically, meaning that the calls for a new referendum on Brexit have better legal standing. But all of that said, we really need to dive into Theresa May's new problem. Shortly after delaying the vote on the Brexit deal, May left the UK to meet with other European leaders. And reportedly, while she was there, she was looking for assurances on the things that the current Brexit deal doesn't cover. Right, things like trade and how the Northern Ireland backstop would work. However, even those assurances were withheld, the European Parliament issuing a statement today where they made it clear they supported the backstop, and without it, they wouldn't vote for the agreement. Main point here, not great for May here, and then it gets worse. After delaying the vote, and while she was meeting leaders in Europe, there were calls by many in Labour and their allies for a no-confidence vote against May and her government. Such a vote, if passed, would mean May would step down, a general election would be triggered, and a new prime minister chosen. And there are concerns that a general election would be disastrous, as the March 29th deadline for a Brexit decision is quickly approaching, and a sudden switch in government could confuse the process. But as far as the timing here, it wasn't exactly clear what would happen. We saw Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn saying that he doesn't plan to instigate a no-confidence vote until it has the highest chance of passing, ideally after a Brexit deal vote fails. But here's the thing, a no-confidence vote from the opposition party in Parliament isn't too surprising. However, at the same time, there had also been some talk about her own party instigating a no-confidence vote. And to clarify here, these two no-confidence votes are different things. One, and this would come from the outside, would likely be against May and her entire government and seek to change which party was in charge by saying elections needed to be held. And everyone in Parliament would vote on this. And these rarely win. The last time that happened was March of 79. And the other kind would be from May's own party, only seeking to change who is the prime minister. And only her party, the Conservative Party, would vote on this one. And on that note, this Conservative-led no-confidence vote was first seriously hinted at yesterday by Duncan Smith. He's a former Brexiter, a former Conservative Party leader, and he said on ITV,
I do detect that in the last 24 hours, people have decided that this isn't going to work out at all.
And according to Conservative Party rules, they only need 48 MPs out of 330 that would need to sign a vote for no confidence to challenge May's leadership. Which then brings us to the huge news today, where it was reported that the 48-vote threshold within the Conservative Party had been exceeded, and that a vote of no confidence would be held today. And as far as the initial indications following this, it seemed like it might be close. Quickly following this news, we saw 160 Conservative members publicly say that they will support May. And that number is incredibly important because she needs roughly 166 votes to keep her position as prime minister. So as long as they privately are voting like they're talking about publicly, at the very least, it's going to be a close one. And also something interesting happening right before this vote is something that Theresa May said. According to reports, she told members of an internal Conservative Party committee, I won't lead the party into the next general election. And so that's been seen by some as her way of saying, let me drag this body across the finish line. I'm not looking to maintain this position, be the people's champ, I will just get the job done. Although it should be noted that Theresa May actually has a lot of support from voters in her own party. According to recent polling, 58-28 Conservative voters think she should remain Conservative leader and prime minister. And even among general population, it was 40% to 34%. And as it's been noted, it would be a big deal if she won, because that also means that she wouldn't be able to be challenged for a year. And the big news surrounding this story announced just before I finished this video, and this next cut is definitely not coming because I have to wait for it to be announced, which is further in the future, although for you, it's just going to be in a few seconds, is Theresa May will remain prime minister thanks to a vote of 200 in support of May and 117 against. And so now that we have that news, I really do want to pass the question off to you. What do you think happens from here? Are we going to see a meaningful, drastic change? Is the UK still headed towards that cliff? What do you think happens from here? And specifically to the people in the EU and the UK, what do you want to happen? And also a question, do we have anyone watching that you voted leave or stay and now you've changed your mind? And if so, why or why not? And that's actually where I'm going to end today's show. Remember, if you like this video, you want to show a little support, you can hit that like button. If you're new here, you want more of these daily dives into the news, just hit that subscribe button, ring that bell to turn on notifications. Also, if you missed either the last Philip DeFranco show or Extra Morning News video, you can click or tap right there to watch those. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces and I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow.